This conversation between Bill Verdon and Walter Langford is being taped in Bill's home in Springfield, Missouri, on April 17, 1988. Bill, I know that you were born in Hazel Park, Michigan, which I think is just outside Detroit.
That's a suburb of Detroit.
Yeah, tell me then how you got started in baseball and where you went in the minors and so forth on the way up to the majors.
Well, I just always enjoyed baseball. My father played any kind of baseball he could play. He went and played with town teams and so forth in Michigan. And I guess that's how I really got the fever. But then, ever since I can remember, I've always wanted to play and play this anywhere I could find somebody that would take time to play or take part in playing. And as far as my how I got hooked up in professional baseball was, of course, Michigan at that time was real big in baseball.
Oh, yes.
All the schools there were, they played baseball and had teams. And
was Ray Fisher still the coach there in those days?
He could have been, but I can't answer that.
He was in the 30s and 40s.
But I was thinking, when my folks were originally from Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And so they moved to Detroit during the Depression looking for work.
Yeah.
And then after the Depression was over, then they came back to Missouri. They wanted to come back home. And so, of course, I was born in Michigan, and I come to Missouri with them. I came down here and moved to West Plains, Missouri, which is about 100 miles from here.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't have baseball. I played one high school baseball game all the time.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. It just wasn't part of their program.
Yeah.
And, of course, I played a little bit. I played on town teams and so on and so forth. But a friend of mine went out in Kansas and tried out professionally. And they recommended he go up in Kansas and play amateur ball during the summer. So I talked him into taking me with him. So I went up in this little town in Clay Center, Kansas. And we tried out for that team in that league, played 50 or 60 games during the course of the summer. Mm-hmm. It was the college kids and high school kids that were interested in playing baseball. And I made the club, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent two summers out there playing. That's really how I got started professionally.
Yeah. And how did you move on up to St. Louis then?
Well, I spent 2 years in Kansas in that amateur league, and I was signed by the Yankees.
Uh-huh.
And I spent 4 years in their organization, working up in the organization. I played D-ball and B-ball and A-ball, double A-ball and triple A-ball in the course of 5 years.
Yeah.
And the fourth year with the Yankee organization, I was traded to the Cardinals. And I don't know, you might remember the Slaughter deal. Enos Slaughter went from the Cardinals to the Yankees.
Yep.
So I came from the Yankees to the Cardinals.
Yeah.
And I spent 1 year in their minor league system, and then I broke in with the Cardinals in 1955.
I've got that on my notes here, in fact. 54, you were traded by the Yanks for Slaughter. All right, now you came up to Cardinals in 55, and you had two managers, Eddie Stanky and Harry Walker.
That's right.
Team came in seventh that season, but you had a good year. And you had a lot of fine teammates. Kind of hard to believe the team with Musial and Shane Deans and Ken Boyer and yourself and Rapalski and Moon and Addicts could finish seventh.
Well, typical in baseball, our pitching wasn't very deep.
No, I know that. And that wasn't, Harvey didn't have a very good year that
And there was a number of us that was very young.
Mm-hmm.
Boyer, myself, even Wally Moon had just been up a year, and Rapalski had been around a couple of years. The only two real old-timers and stable people were Musial and Chaney's at that time, I think Hemus. But we just didn't have enough pitching to win. But what I think would have been, that would have been a basis for a real good club if Frank Lane hadn't come along and broke it up. He broke it up quite a bit next year.
He didn't fool around, did he?
No.
Well, now,
I'm not kicking about that. That's part of the business. I was just saying that was basically
That's right.
Could have been a good club.
But in the early part of the next season, Trader Lane must have peddled you to...
Yeah, he traded me to Pittsburgh.
To Pittsburgh, which I doubt that you objected to.
Well, I didn't. I wasn't really happy about it.
Yeah.
I live in Missouri, and well, Cardinals here. Yeah, I was it was close to home, and I, you know.
And
but
at
I didn't.
At that point, Pittsburgh was at a pretty low stage, right at that moment. Yeah.
I didn't object to it. I was willing to play anywhere and everywhere.
Sure. You went to Pittsburgh for Littlefield and Del Greco.
That's right.
And they didn't get much out of those two.
As it turned out, there wasn't didn't turn out that well for him. Although Del Greco played a number
for
of years,
while, yeah.
number of years, yeah. and Big Leagues never did hit a whole lot.
Yeah.
But it's funny. As long as I've been around Pittsburgh, and as many years as I was involved there, both playing coach and managing, last Bobby Del Greco still throws batting practice for the Pirates in Pittsburgh during the course of the summer.
Great.
He, and don't get me wrong, that's not his only livelihood. He
does.
No. That's a pastime.
It is for a lot of people, yeah. I know that. And how was Bobby Bregan as a manager?
Bobby was a thorough tactician. Mm-hmm. He knew all the ins and outs in baseball. And, he had some success. I didn't mind playing for him at all.
Mm-hmm.
He was good to me.
Yeah.
He did some strange things sometimes that got himself in trouble, but I guess we all do that.
No stranger than a lot of others, like Billy Martin and plenty of others.
Myself included.
You had some good teammates there, too, for a team that finished way down, was down at that point. Mazeroski and Grote and Clemente and Friend, Face, Law.
Was the basis. I went there, all those people were there.
Yeah, and took you 2 or 3 years to get to the top.
Took 2 or 3 years to develop.
Was Ricky there by then?
Ricky was there when I went there,
yeah.
But he didn't stay too. He was very, very inactive at that point.
Uh-huh.
He was more of a consultant.
Yeah.
Joe Brown was the general manager at that point.
Yeah. That was your best one-season average you had.
Mm-hmm.
That season.
That's the best year I put together as far as base hits.
Then the next season, Reagan was there at the beginning and Murtaugh finished, and they picked up Skinner and Perkey.
Well, Skinner was there before.
Yeah, but he hadn't played it
regularly. Hadn't played much.
Yeah.
Started playing. Perkey was the addition out of the organization.
Now, Bob is still, I see him as a coach somewhere. Where is he?
Bob Skinner's in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, that's where it is.
With Chuck Tanner.
Yeah. In 58, you moved all the way from 8th place to 2nd place.
Mm-hmm. That was the start of the coming together of the club. And I think it just, was starting to mature. We played a couple, 3 years together, and things just started happening.
Yeah. You had big Ted Kozuski with you that season.
Mm-hmm.
He was headed toward the end.
That was the latter part of his career.
He came over to the White Sox just in time to get in on their pennant-winning season in 59.
Yeah, there was that. That was 59, I think. Maybe might have been his last year. Well, another 60.
Played a little
maybe.
In 60.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he had quite a finish there in 59. I saw many games then when I was in South Bend, and White Sox fan, and he had quite a series on top of it. In 59, you picked up Hoke and Burgess, Dick Stewart, and you were reunited with Harvey Haddix when you got over to Pittsburgh. After your first year in St. Louis, he was here, and then you got back over there. He got back over
there. That was might have been the best deal ever made by anybody.
Which one?
One that Brown made with Cincinnati. And that's when we got Haddix, we got Burgess, and we got Don Hoke all in one deal.
That's a pretty good pickup.
For Frank Thomas.
And he Frank had his days.
Well,
but
Frank was.
Were,
don't get me wrong. I'm not. Yeah. I'm not belittling Frank.
Yeah, he's one guy, and these are three guys.
The ingredient that our club needed. That
exactly.
That was exactly what we needed.
And Burgess later, I remember, became one of the great pinch hitters of all time. Particularly again with the White Sox. Tell me a little of your recollections of Haddix's 12 perfect innings.
I remember it pretty plainly, really. You know, I think really you start noticing a little bit more about it after you get into the game a little farther, because it's a no-hitter and a perfect game. But specifics, as far as I'm concerned, there was only about two balls, really, that were hit hard.
He told me that, yeah.
It was a line drive to me in center field, which was not a tough play.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I came in and caught it very easily. And there was a ball hit the shortstop that Schofield happened to be playing short that day. I don't remember why Grove wasn't playing, but Schofield was playing that particular game.
Yeah.
And the ball took a bad hop. And it was hit hard, but right about the time he started to catch it, it took it. And his reaction was excellent.
He
caught the ball up off of his ear and threw the guy out. And that's the only two balls that I remember being hit well, except the home run.
The home run that wasn't a home run.
We had, and other than that, we
did
had.
You know the this? He told me when I talked with him about a year ago, less than a year ago, that many years later, talking with Bob Buell, Buell told him, I was in center field with glasses and a fellow sitting next to me had a towel, and he signaled every pitch to every batter, and they didn't get a hit till the 13th
inning. Yeah, I knew that. Of course, now, one thing you got to understand, a lot of hitters won't take signs.
I know that,
But there were certain hitters on that club that knew everything it was throwing. He, you know, his stuff and his control was so good,
it
didn't
be,
make any difference. But what I started to say about the particular game was we had about 12 chances to score runs.
12 or 13 hits?
We just couldn't get
some. Who was it made a base running blunder somewhere along the line that he mentioned and that I see in the play-by-play?
It's possible. I don't know. I don't remember for sure.
I can't remember who it was.
But the one thing I do, Skinner hit a ball in about the seventh inning. It was kind of looked like there was a storm brewing in the area, a thunderstorm. And about the time that he hit the ball, the wind was really blowing in from right field.
Yeah.
And the ball would have been way out of the ballpark. I mean, and with a couple runners on. We had a couple runners on. And it would have been way out. But the wind was blowing so much at that time that it brought it back in the park. So I guess he just wasn't supposed to win.
Sounds like it. I remember I listened to that whole game on the radio in South Bend, Indiana, and couldn't believe all that was going on. It was a great, great moment. Now in '60 it was the year. Anything in particular other than just everybody maturing and getting together that put you guys on top that year?
Well, other than the trade. I thought the trade was what really molded the club together with Hope.
Yeah.
And Hope and Burgess and Haddix being one of our pitchers, you know. That's, Mizell coming.
Oh, Wilbur.
That made a difference. We needed another starting pitcher.
But Vern Law gave you 20-9 and Friend 18-12 and Mizell 13-5, Haddix 11-10. Face was 10-8. That wasn't his great season, but he was still.
No, but he's still. He had a number of saves.
Sure. Yeah, he had 24 saves, which in those days was pretty big.
No, I don't think there's anything special other than just, as it turned out, it just was our year. Things started good right from the get-go. I mean, right from the first game, everything started working.
Was Danny able to get more out of the players than some other managers you've seen?
Well, Danny was, I thought, an exceptional person. Really kind of deceiving to a lot of people. Uh-huh. Everybody thought he was kind of a low-key, laid-back, not very smart, and all that stuff. But that was far from the truth. He was very, very adept at the game of baseball. He knew all the ins and outs and how to manage and how to basically. I think handle a group. I think he had trouble sometimes with individuals at the time, but as a group, I thought he did a great job. And nobody could have ever treated me any better than he did.
That's wonderful.
Of course, he kind of set me up for my career after playing.
Yeah.
He encouraged me to get into it.
Yeah.
And then
that's good.
Set it up so I would take over there when he retired.
Mm-hmm. I call that 60 series the most bizarre or extraordinary of all World Series. It was a strange series.
The only one that ended with a home run on the last pitch, the last inning of the last game. It's the only one in which one team more than doubled you in hits, runs, home runs, everything except wins.
And lost.
Yeah. I say we're lucky, though, that the rotation wasn't set up so that he could pitch the first, fourth, and seventh games. It might have been a different story.
I think we might all agree with that, especially the way it is. But I'll tell you this, and I'll retract that to some extent. That club, that year, always won the game that they had to win.
That they had to win. Well, that's a big
And it'd be hard for me to say, yes, he would have beat us three games if he'd have been in that rotation, because I never saw anybody do it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I saw some of the 25 series. I saw it on electric scoreboard down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter Johnson had beaten them 4-1 in the first game and beat them 4-0 in the fourth game. And Washington led 3-1, and then Pittsburgh tied it and came back to face Johnson in the seventh game. And in the little movie house where they had this electric scoreboard in Corpus Christi, Texas, there were gamblers going around taking bets. And you may remember Washington got 4 runs in the first inning. And nobody figured that they'd ever score 4 off of Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But those gamblers are pretty damn smart. They were going around taking more bets on Pittsburgh, getting 2-1 odds all over the whole darn thing.
They wouldn't come back, huh?
And Pittsburgh came back, so the gamblers won all of their bets, see? And it was unbelievable, and it shouldn't have happened. I mean, Bucky Harris, I think, at that time, I thought, goofed. He had Firpo Marbury ready to go and fresh and everything else, and he was the first real closer that baseball had, practically. And Johnson was tired, and it was wet as the dickens, raining, the ball was wet, the footing was slippery, and he was tired and obviously didn't have it all that day. And he got him through 7 innings and 2 outs in the eighth, and then it just all fell apart. And Marbury could have saved that game for him, I think, but he didn't. But you'll remember that Peckinpah made 8 errors in that series and really gave it away.
Did he?
Gave 2 games away earlier, and then in that game he'd made his 7th error early. Comes the 8th inning, the top of the 8th, and he hits a home run, put Washington back on top. It looked like he was going to be the hero after all.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom of the inning, he made an error on what would have been the 3rd out, and the winning run scored on the next batter who got a hit. So, anyway, in 62, you picked up, how was this guy, McBean?
He was a character.
That's what I was going to ask. Wasn't he a character?
He was a character. He was he was braggadocio, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He'd tell everybody what he was going to do, and a lot of times he did it. The one year he had an exceptional year.
Yeah. He came out, my memory's any good, and I'm checking to see, he came out to San Diego in the expansion.
He never did do much after that one year he had in Pittsburgh.
No, that's right. They picked him up and I think gambled and made a mistake in using their choice on McCool, who was, Billy was 3-5 and 4.27 ERA, so he didn't help many at all. You had a pitcher briefly in 62 that I know something about. Named Olivo from the Dominican Republic.
Diomedes,
yep. He had a brother they called Chichi, who pitched in the majors a little bit too. I went over, after I retired from Notre Dame, I went to the Dominican Republic to run a private foundation for 3 years, and was very conscious of all the baseball there. And they were big heroes because they were two of the first Dominicans that reached the major
mm-hmm.
leagues, and the Alou brothers and a few others came quickly thereafter,
right,
and now it's a true flood coming in. But they both died very young, which is
surprising. I didn't know that.
Yeah, both died in their maybe 40s, but certainly young people. You also had Sturtevant a little while that year.
Tom Sturtevant.
Was he was on the downgrade by then, wasn't he? Or in 60. Two, or was
Tom,
he?
I don't remember how old Tom was at that point. He was about my age. He must have been Must have been 30 years old.
I can tell you in a second. You guys in 62 finished fourth. And Sturdivant was 32. Had a pretty good year, 9-5.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad at that point. Tom, I played with Tom prior to that and played with him in the Yankee organization.
I was going to say, he had been with the Yankees a long time.
Tom was another, he was a character to some extent. He got thrown a knuckleball. That's how he stuck around.
Uh-huh.
Tried that.
A lot of them do that.
Yeah.
Like Boughton.
Tom's in Oklahoma now.
Is he?
See me like he's a sheriff or something.
Ah.
And I don't know the way, maybe you shouldn't quote me on that because I'm not positive.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me that they thought he had run for sheriff or some kind of office.
Mm-hmm. 63, you had Clendenin, who was have his moments later on, but not so much at that point, I guess. And
always a good talent.
Yeah. And Stargell became a regular for the first time that season.
Mm-hmm.
He had been around, though, for two or three years, hadn't he, before then, or at least...
Well, he had been... I'm not sure he was with us full-time.
No, up and down.
But he'd been in spring training. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Everybody liked his talent. Everybody knew.
You could see it from the BNS.
Yes. But he had streamlined talent when he first came up.
He
wasn't big.
Wasn't that hefty.
No, he was fast and good arm and sleek and all that. And, but the nature of his weight, he got to where he couldn't run that much.
That's right. he's apparently quite a guy as a person, too.
He's a good person.
Yeah.
I don't know. Willie's just like kind of like a father figure to a lot of the people on the club. Not at that point, not when I first was on the club, because we were older than he was. But later on in his career, he got to be the daddy of all of them.
Yeah, he was the one that created family.
Mm-hmm. Plus his ability to lead by production.
Yes. I'm looking just to see one thing here. Stargell first became a regular actually in 65, and he hit 272 that year.
That was my last year,
in 65, In 64, you picked up, you had anyway, Manny Mota. I think that's his first team with the first team.
Manny Mota was with the Giants when he first came into the
business. Was he really?
Yeah.
And then you got him, and later he went to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Do I remember that he led the league in hitting one year?
No, that was Matty Alou.
I guess so.
Mota was a good hitter, though.
Yeah, he was a good hitter.
He got his share.
Quite a pinch hitter, too.
In fact, we split playing center field quite a bit the last couple years I played.
And Bob Veal joined the pitchers. Steve Blass. How do you account for his... later inability to find the
nobody
plate.
Knows why
just
or
a
how
mystery,
come.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. Of course, I was on the scene all through that.
Yeah,
I was. I witnessed him starting as a youngster and struggling, and then becoming a good pitcher, and then becoming the best pitcher in the league.
Yeah,
for 2 years.
Yeah,
and then going back to nothing.
Just almost overnight.
Couldn't hit that wall over there. Yeah. He could if there wasn't anything around. You put a hitter up there, he couldn't hit that wall.
Did he ever bean somebody?
Not to my knowledge.
There's a guy in the majors now who has a little bit of that same problem. Forget his first name, Cowley, who was with the White Sox and went to the Phillies. The Phillies expected big things out of him.
The Phillies.
He pitched no hitter for the White Sox.
Yeah.
And he can't find a plate either.
It's right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
There wasn't anything physical wrong with Blass.
No.
He'd go down the bullpen and throw strikes.
Yeah.
Throw the ball well to get on the mound. No, I don't know that anybody knows. There's something in the background somewhere
can't account for, Well, let's see. You later picked up Harry Walker as manager. You'd seen him in St. Louis?
I played for Harry twice. I played for him at Rochester, New York, and Cardinal organization a full year, and then I played for him half a year
Cardinals.
In St. Louis, and then a full year there in 65.
Mm-hmm. And you got Gene Alley as a shortstop in 65. Mm-hmm. How would he rate with guys like Marty Marion as a shortstop?
Gene Alley, you can't rate him with him because he didn't play long enough.
No, that's true.
But for a year or two,
he was good.
He was as good as they were. Yeah, and I say that because of the all-around ability. He was an excellent shortstop. Very good arm, but he produced runs. He was a good hitter.
Yes, yes.
It only lasted for
a very short time. A few years.
He struggled for a couple years before he had those two good years.
Yeah, that's right.
Three good years, whatever he had, I don't remember what it was. And then he played for a little while afterwards that he didn't really produce that many runs. But I don't think Gene really cared that much about playing.
Well, there's part of the answer. I tell young kids that in his day, Marty Marion was just about as good in the field as Ozzie Smith. He wasn't as acrobatic, but...
Well, I'm sure he was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Ozzie's the best I've ever seen.
Well, I have to agree.
I didn't see Marion, so I can't say that.
I did see Marion, and I saw Luis Aparicio when he was about the best in the American League. But Ozzie, I think, for consistency and everything else, covering ground, and I don't know, he just makes some phenomenal plays.
He does one thing I know nobody else ever could do as well, and that's dive for the ball and
get
be up throwing.
Yeah.
And he didn't even look like he was on the ground.
Yeah. In a matter of a split second, he's on his feet.
I never saw anybody could do that. I've seen him get up and throw.
But late.
Not like him.
They take a couple of 3 seconds, and by then they've probably missed the runner. Well, Danny came back to manage late in the 67 season. And then they turned it over to Larry Shepard in 68.
Danny finished up the season in 67.
Yeah, I know that.
For Harry Walker, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, Larry Shepard was the manager the next year.
Yeah. Now then, after you finished playing in 68...
65, really.
Well, yeah, you...
Pinch hit a couple of times in 68.
That's right. Six games, yeah. After 68, between then and 72, were you a coach for the Pirates?
I managed for the Mets and the Met organization for 2 years in 66 and 67.
Yeah.
And I coached for the Pirates 4 years before I managed.
And took over in 72. All right, now. You moved in at the right time.
Well, yeah. you might say that.
Either everything was set or you knew how to handle it.
Well, no, I was fortunate that we had a good club. Murtaugh we won world championship with that club, and I took over in 72. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I'm not so sure we didn't have a better club in 72 than we did 71. We just didn't win the final games.
Yeah, you led Cincinnati, as I remember, 2 games to one.
Yeah,
we lost both of them in the last innings or thereabouts.
We lost the fourth game, we got beat 7-1 or 7-0 or 7-1 or something like that. Elvis pitched that game. But the final game,
we had
a lead tonight.
Bottom of the ninth.
Yeah. That's when Justy gave up home run to...
Justy had done some yeoman service for you through the years.
Yeah, nobody's kicking about his effort.
But he...
He gave up the home run and tied it up and then moose through the wild pitch.
Wild pitch, yeah. It's like Worrell goes in yesterday to save a game, and in a matter of seconds, he's thrown it away.
It doesn't matter how good you are, if somebody hits you, why, that's part of it.
It seems to me that those relievers who depend so heavily on the overpowering fastball, like Lee Smith and Goose Gossage and Todd Worrell, are a little more susceptible to getting bombed in a hurry when they go in.
Well,
everybody's going to lose one now.
Yeah, everybody's going to lose one once in a while. Given days, he's not throwing quite as hard as he would the other days, too. You can't throw the same all the time.
No, that's
right. I think those guys, if they had to go more than 2 innings, they'd get in trouble.
Yeah.
See, what they do is they come in and only have to face one part of the lineup.
He didn't even get through 2 batters, though,
no,
before he was in trouble.
That don't happen to me.
Whether Whitey should have left Mac Williams in. He had already gone four beautiful innings, but you know, those second guesses are so easy to make. But you'd think, as Whitey would, he's my closer, Orel, and Mac Williams certainly isn't good for more than four innings when he hasn't worked
hard. That's ordinarily true.
Yeah. It'll be true.
And I think if he had to do it again today, he would do the same thing.
Still do the same thing. Yeah, I agree. He may be doing it right now. Who knows? You had, in 72, that was quite a lineup. Was that Clement his last year? It was. And he got his 3,000th hit just before the season ended.
Last hit he got during the season.
Yeah.
And then we took him out for the remainder two or three games he had left.
Yeah.
Let him rest for the playoffs.
Yeah. And I was in Miami on my way over to the Dominican Republic when his plane went down to Puerto Rico. Yeah. You had some pretty good bombers with Stargell, Clemente, Oliver, and Hebner.
Yes, we did.
And some pretty good guys on the mound, and Blass, Ellis, Bryles, Moose, Keeson. Keeson never became a real big winner, but he pitched some mighty good games.
He was a winner.
Yeah. All the way through his career.
I really think that pitching staff was quite a bit better than everybody really realized.
I think you're right.
Plus, those pitchers you speak of, we backed them up with Justy and Hernandez, the left-hander from the Dominican.
I've got Justy's name on the list, but Hernandez had...
He was the left-handed reliever.
He had 14 saves.
Left-handers could not hit him.
Yeah. Justy had 22 and Hernandez 14 that year. Yep. Well, in 73, they brought Murtaugh back at the end of the season. And Blass, I think, began to have his troubles in that year, didn't he?
Well, he started the year having troubles that year. From day one, he was not
never,
a good pitcher.
Never really had him.
It really started in spring training.
Yeah. Now, when you left them toward the end of the season, were you already in contact with the Yankees?
No.
No, they got hold of you after the season's over.
Well, that all kind of materialized a little out of the ordinary. Simple reason, they'd already hired Dick Williams to be their manager, and that's when he got into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
He got into trouble with
Commissioner
Finley.
Finley
wouldn't let him go break his contract,
so
the commissioner ruled that he couldn't break the contract.
Yeah.
So that left an opening late in the winter,
uh-huh.
And most of the guys were already employed,
that
they really had any experience. And I was kind of just happened to be there at the right time. I'd already agreed to go to Denver to manage for the Houston organization.
Yeah. And you didn't miss much that year, finishing two games behind Baltimore.
No, we challenged all the way.
And another big batch of good names, Thurman, Munson, and Pinella, and Nettles.
Really nobody knew much about them at that point.
Mercer, Chambliss. And you had a good staff. Medich had quite a year for you,
mm-hmm.
I remember, and Dobson. And had Sparky to finish off.
Mm-hmm.
Tidrow and May were... Tidrow might have been partly starter and reliever. Was Nettles as good a third baseman in the field as Brooks Robinson?
Well, I can't answer that. I never saw Brooks play other than just
at the end.
Points maybe in the winter off season, just playing in the World Series or something. I'd see him play. But, I think probably. There wasn't too much difference.
Close.
Maybe Brooks might have been a little bit faster than Nettles.
Yeah, I guess Greg was never very fast.
But, at third base it didn't mean that much.
Mm-hmm.
Both had excellent hands. Yep. Both knew what to do with the ball.
I saw in his heyday Pi Trainer play a great deal at third base for Pittsburgh, and for my money, he's still the all-time best third baseman.
Everybody says that.
Yeah, a lot of people do. How was Bobby Mercer? He never seemed to live up to his potential. He had some good seasons, but...
Bobby was a good player.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about that.
But I thought he was misplaced in center field. I did not think he was.
No, that might be the problem.
I changed. See, he was brought up as Mantle's replacement.
And, yeah, I know.
Build up and
that was put two strikes on him right there.
And Bobby Mercer has never liked me to this day for the simple reason I took him out of center field and put him in right field.
And he didn't like you for that.
No. And he was an excellent right fielder.
He should have thanked you. Yeah.
But anyway, that's not here nor there. Yeah. It doesn't make any difference. I did what I felt like I had to do.
Well, of course.
And I thought Bobby did a great job in right field for us that year.
Yeah.
And he produced some
runs.
I've
seen him play right field.
He was also better suited for Yankee Stadium than he was Shea Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
mm-hmm.
when I managed, we were in Shea Stadium.
Of course, now he later went to the Cubs, did he not?
Yes.
Mercer. And
San Francisco before that.
San Francisco. Did he even play for the Dodgers? Can't remember. It doesn't matter.
I can't remember.
I've got the baseball encyclopedia out in the car, but we don't need to look that up. I remember I lived for a little over a year. We lived in Walnut Creek outside of Oakland. And that year, Oakland had pitchers that were beginning to pitch complete games all the time. Langford, and my namesake, and others. In one game, Rick Langford had won about 17 or 18 games, something like that, maybe even 19. Might have been going for his 20th, which he never got. Came up to the ninth inning, leading maybe by a run, and Mercer comes up with somebody, one or two on, and pokes it into just into the right field stands and beats him. And yeah, there's a lot of that that goes on, too. Now, in the 75 season, was Steinbrenner the owner by then?
Yes.
In New York, in the Yankees? And he brought Billy in late in the season.
Yeah, he took over in about 73, I think, 72 or 73. Uh-huh. He was there both years I was there, but he was suspended all the time I was there.
Ah, that's true.
So yeah. I didn't really have too many dealings with him. I had some.
Yeah.
And I know what he's all about.
I think anybody that's been close to him knows what he's all about, yeah. Catfish was there that season for you.
That was a pleasure working with him.
Yes, and he had one of his best seasons.
He was a good pitcher, good person.
How was at that point, how was Bobby Bonds?
Bobby was a player that should have been a little bit better. I thought his talent was excellent. He was a good player and a good person. I had no problems with Bobby, but I thought he overswung a lot, struck out a lot more than he really should. But that was his nature, and that was his way he played.
Well, you can say that about a lot of them. Reggie is a classic example of the strikeouts.
Anyway, Bobby was a good player, and you could win with Bob. There's no question about that. And he was an all-around player. He could do it all. He could run, and he could throw, and he could hit for power. And just thought he could have been a little bit better.
A lot of people said so.
Maybe not.
Is Barry going to be better?
Barry is going to be an excellent player.
He's pretty close to it right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Barry's got basically the same tools his dad had, except throwing. His dad could out-throw him a lot. His arm is just average. Yeah.
They got Barry playing center field right now.
No, he's playing left field.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's where he belongs.
Yeah. He could play center, but he's better. He's better because of his arm. He's better in left.
Oh yeah, they got Van Slyke in center. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Roy White was there that season.
Yes.
Was he as good a player as a lot of the other outfielders that the Yankees have had?
I don't like to get into comparisons.
No, that's always invidious.
You don't like somebody. I thought Roy White was an excellent, excellent person.
That's what I hear.
Hard worker, excellent person.
Yeah.
But no, if you want me to answer your question, no, he wasn't as good.
No, not quite. Anyway. No, you took over the Astros toward the end of the season in 75.
Mm-hmm.
And you had such people as J.R. Richard.
He was just starting.
Well, you saw him then when he went on to real fame and then have that unfortunate
finish.
Yes, I did.
Was he a nice person to deal with and work with?
I thought a great deal of J.R. He had a great, let's see what I'm trying to say, great respect for authority. Mm. He did. He
was one of the last ones who did.
He didn't have any qualms about, you know, he was Man Mountain. He was 240 pounds. And,
yeah.
And, but I never ever felt like he ever resented
anything.
Anybody that told him anything that I said or asked him to do or corrected him on or whatever. And this is all over and above the fact that he was the best pitcher in the business for a couple
years.
Sure was.
Was Bob Watson a strength of real? Was he as much strength as Stargell was, let's say?
No.
No, not on the team, not in the leadership.
No.
Yeah. How about, was Cedeño going downhill by that time?
Yes.
I think so, yeah. But still was able to.
Oh, so he could still win with him.
Yeah.
He was still a good player.
Yeah.
How'd
you like the Astrodome?
I enjoyed it because simple reason it was ideal for that
Houston
for that area and climate.
Sure, I know. I was raised in Texas.
You couldn't beat it. You know, you knew you was going to play.
If you're going to play night games, you darn near had to be indoors.
No mosquitoes and
that's
no.
That's right.
No rain.
Yeah. Yeah. In 76, they brought him in third place, and you had people like Durker. Was he a really strong pitcher?
At that point, he had lost some of his real strength. He was a real power pitcher.
Yes.
But he had a little arm trouble at that point.
So many of them do.
Yeah, but he came back and was a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah.
He was a guy that would, I thought, even at that point, even right after he came back, would still probably win as many games as he lost, or maybe even win a few more than he lost.
Mm-hmm. Was Jose Cruz a finished player when he, I mean, a polished player when he came to Houston?
No.
No. But
he became
better.
Oh, I thought when he came to Houston, he was a... I'd consider him a real wild swinger.
He had been with the Cardinals.
As
I watched him swing through the years, it amazed me that he could control that swing as well as he did.
He learned to.
Yeah,
He didn't do it when he first started. When he came to Houston, he came to Houston prior to me going down there, of the 75 season. I came in August.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing him when I got down there.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, then he played regular for the rest of the time I was there.
And for years.
And I really credit himself and Deacon Jones for the adjustment that he made. He became a real good hitter.
Mm-hmm. He did, indeed.
Deacon Jones was the hitting instructor.
Yeah, I saw him. He was in. He had that same spot in San Diego while I was that one of the years I was there. And I think good old Joaquin Andujar came up about that time to him.
Yes, he did.
Was he as unpredictable, or whatever you want to call it, then as he is now?
I would think he hasn't changed too much.
Hasn't changed much, yeah. Not going to either.
Probably not.
The following year, you were third again in 77, and Joe Niekro joined you. He wasn't in his first year, but he wasn't too far along in his career either.
He'd been with the Cubs for a while.
Yeah, that's right. And he went and, he had been with San Diego.
San Diego before coming to Houston, that's right. No, Joe was a good pitcher by the time he came to us.
Yeah. Was he ever as good a pitcher as Phil?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
For a few seasons.
I don't think you can compare his career with Phil's.
No, you can't.
But for
a few seasons.
Seasons, yeah.
He was along about 1980 when they got into the playoffs. Joe was a...
Oh, he was tough.
He was a... You bet.
He was not only a good pitcher, he was a good athlete.
Yeah.
He did everything well.
You saw Floyd Bannister that season, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just beginning, I think. He wasn't the pitcher then that he has become. In fact, I don't know that he's become even the pitcher that he is capable of being.
Always had great stuff. I just felt like he didn't throw enough strikes.
Yeah. Well,
much. You know, for whatever reason, I never really thought he was wild. I just don't think he threw any. I didn't think he threw the ball over the plate enough.
In 79, when you were second, how was Sam Beto when he came up?
How was he?
Yeah.
Young, hard-throwing left-hander that could throw strikes.
He had a pretty good year, didn't he, in 79?
Yeah, I'm sure he did. 79, 80, Bo 80 was a...
Yeah.
80, 81, all both were good years for him. 79, 80, 81. That's an unfortunate case. He come up with an arm problem right when it would have been financially great for him.
Yeah, Sam Beto had 22 saves in 79.
Mm-hmm.
It was 8-7. Do the relievers suffer more from the overworked arm, even though they pitch only a few innings at a time, but it seems like relievers have, the great bulk of them have two or three good seasons and then they're about through.
Yeah, I think they have. I think that's the reason they just have to use their arm, even though they don't throw as many innings. They're up and down. They're up and down so much. Yeah, they have to throw, and the pressure. Anytime they're pitching, it's all everything's on the line, and it's.
That's right. They got to put out their best. Leonard had a lot of promise and potential from the beginning, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Would you say that maybe last year he sort of reached his potential?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think he's capable of doing a lot of things, and I don't know that he really surprised anybody by doing.
No, not much. He has the reputation of being a little difficult to get along with.
He's changed since. Since I had him, I don't mean that he's changed in that respect. I mean, he was having problems with alcohol when I had him. And it wasn't an obvious thing, and it wasn't a situation where he was creating all kinds of problems or anything. I had no problems with him.
That's good.
But I think the fact that he got straightened out, got his life back in order, that and his ability started coming in the front.
Mm-hmm. That can happen.
Yeah. And okay. As far as his hard to get along with, I can't say that because
I never had
too many problems.
Well, in 80, you came in first in the West and lost that playoff to the Phillies 3-2. Were you...
We were leading in the eighth inning by 3 runs in that game.
That's right.
Yeah. We were also leading in the fifth game, in the fourth game, 2-1 or something.
That's right,
like
and
that.
They tied it in the bottom of the ninth. No.
That's probably seventh or eighth.
They tied it in the eighth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, they went ahead 1 run in the eighth. You tied it in the bottom of the ninth, and then they beat you in the tenth. But. McCarty didn't have it in the eighth inning, is that right? Or he's the loser anyway. Forsh used Sam Beto, Forsh, and McCarty in the eighth inning of that the fifth game of the playoffs.
Well, McCarty was used in the last inning, I think.
Yeah. The
tenth inning.
McCarty was used. Right. He came in the ninth, and he lost in the tenth. Yeah,
and it's strange, you know, you talk about all those games and all the things that happened, and that was one of the damnedest games you ever
seen. I remember listening to that one, too.
It's similar, that particular game is similar to the Pittsburgh seventh game of the World Series.
Yep.
Everything back and forth and all the runs scored and so forth.
Yeah.
The whole thing ended up hinging on a bad hop single in the 10th inning.
Jeez.
Over Berger.
Wait a second.
First baseman.
Your first baseman?
Yeah.
Art Howe?
No. Left-handed and was with Detroit now.
Bergman.
Bergman. Yeah. I was close.
Dave Bergman, yeah, you were.
I don't remember who hit it, but somebody hit a ground ball to first base, and he went over to get it, and it took a bad hop, hit the dirt, and then over his head, and they bunted him over and got a base hit to score the winning run.
Well, World Series have been lost on bad hops like the 24.
And that particular, and nobody ever remembers that. Nobody knows that.
No, that's right. That's right. All right, now, in 84, you had, first, you had Jeff Reardon for a time.
Mm-hmm.
Did he show the promise that he has produced since?
Yeah, well, he had pitched well prior to my going up there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was my fault or somebody else's fault, but he did not have real good years for me.
Yeah, I skipped 83. No, he's had better years recently.
Yeah. When you really contributed some of it to, he had had some back problems. I think he still has some back problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, being new and him having some back problems, maybe I didn't treat it just right. I don't know. Yeah. But he did not pitch
didn't
as well.
Pitch too well.
I'm aware of that. But I still liked him.
Mm-hmm.
He liked the ball.
Yeah.
He liked the pitch.
He still does. Yep.
And I like him personally. I don't think he really thought I did. It's strange how managers and players, you know, sometimes cross wires.
Sure.
But he wasn't sure about me.
Well.
But I didn't. I just, you know, you do what you have to do and what you feel like is the way to do it. Wasn't, as far as I was concerned, it just wasn't right with him.
Mm-hmm.
But he still did a good job for me. I can't kick about the job he did.
All of us who have people under us have that situation. I had students in Notre Dame that had that feeling about me that I didn't like them. And I coached on the side. I coached tennis 15 years and fencing 15 years in Notre Dame. Had NCAA champions in both of them. And there are plenty of tennis players and fencers that thought I should have used them all the time. And I didn't think so.
Anyway, yes, Reardon had that.
Yeah.
And really, I thought his control got better, too,
mm-hmm.
throwing the breaking ball over the plate.
Now, when you went there in 83, I'm sure he was. John McHale was the president, I think.
Yes. One of the nicest people I've ever worked with.
Well, I knew him when he was a student at Notre Dame and had high regard for him. He was a first baseman and had hopes of being a big league player, but didn't quite measure.
I really thought John was too good for his own good.
That could be, yeah.
And I don't mean that despairing error, you know, critically. I just mean that he just was so good that I'm sure some people took advantage of him.
I've read that sort of statement about him. You had a lot of good guys there. How was Steve Rogers to handle?
I don't know that anybody really handled Steve Rogers. He was, I had no problem with him. He was a good pitcher. But Steve was his own man. He did his own thing. And it's, he was a good pitcher.
He was.
I don't know what else I can say. For several years. He was a winner. He won big games for him the year they won a pennant.
Yeah, I asked Marty Merriman how he enjoyed managing Satchel Paige when Marty was in charge of the Browns. He says, "You didn't manage Satchel Paige. He managed you." Charlie Lee.
One of the best competitors I've ever worked with. One of the best pitchers I've ever worked with.
Think he's going to make a comeback?
I hope so. I really got my fingers crossed for him.
Yep.
That was one of the pleasures of my business, of being able to have him on my club. Yep. And I really hate it because he had a sore arm.
Yep.
Because that was right at hit the wrong time for him.
Sure. Sure. What about Dawson, Raines, Carter, and Wallach?
Dawson's one of the best people I ever worked with. Raines is one of the best people I ever worked with.
Mm-hmm.
Wallach is one of the best people I ever worked with.
Carter is Carter.
Carter is a good person,
good
player, talks too much.
Yeah, he gets himself in trouble with his mouth.
He talks too much, and you can't talk that much without getting yourself in trouble.
Exactly. He won't learn it either.
But anyway, I have no kicks with Gary. Gary was good, and
he produced.
Along with him.
Yeah.
He produced, and I like him.
Mm-hmm.
But he does talk too much. He just can't stand it. You give him a mic, he'll talk all day.
And I think Keith Hernandez is about the same way.
Well, I hadn't Keith done, I'm sure that's true.
He's a little more, expresses himself a little.
A little more polished,
yeah,
is he?
That's it. And since 84, have you been working with the Pirates every spring?
No. I worked with the Cardinals first spring.
Oh, I didn't
1985.
Know that.
Uh-huh. I went spring training with the Cardinals, with Whitey.
Yeah.
Worked with the outfielders.
Yeah.
And then during the course of the summer, I hadn't planned on doing it, but I got a call from Lee Thomas,
mm-hmm.
out of the Cardinals farm director.
Yeah.
And they asked me to work with the hitters in the organization on four clubs. And I, of course, I just got away from that, moving around all the time.
Sure.
And I thought about it for a while, and he didn't have anybody to do it, and so one club was in Little Rock, and the other one was in Springfield, Illinois, and the other one was Louisville, and they're all hand close. Wasn't
yep.
Middle.
Yep.
The other one was St. Pete. So I agreed to make three trips to each club during the course of the summer.
How long would you stay? A week or?
No, I'd stay 3 or 4 days.
Uh-huh.
Just to where I get a chance to see all the guys and work with them and so forth.
Evaluate.
And then the next year, Sid Thrift and Leland called me to coach for the Pirates. And I had a debate. I didn't plan on doing that either. And that's how I got back into the Pirate organization.
Did you go to coach for them?
Yeah, I coached a full year.
For 86?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then you've been working with the outfielders and
yes.
hitters and so forth in
well,
spring training?
I work with the outfielders, basically.
Yeah.
Milt May is the hitting instructor now, and so you can't have two people.
No. Although Steinbrenner thought you could have two pitching coaches.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. What was your greatest thrill in baseball?
I think playing and being a part of the 60 club.
Figures.
Yeah, I don't just include the series. I'm talking about
the whole season. Yeah.
Just what the things that happened and the way they happened and how it all turned out. I don't think you could even visualize anything better happening to you other than
that's great.
You know, unless you happen to be a 25-game winner and a Cy Young winner. And that's something else. But that particular year and experience was the best.
That just happens now and then on certain clubs, and they generally move right on up to the top. What was your, can you identify what your best game, the one that you most remember or?
I had a doubleheader in Brooklyn with the Pirates in 56 when I went 7 for 9.
Can't hardly forget that.
As far as base hits and the games, I don't remember win and lose. I know we didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
I know we didn't win both games.
In fact,
we didn't win many times that year in Brooklyn. I know that was, I think, 56, and that was the year Brooklyn
had
good.
They really,
55
yeah.
and 56,
yeah.
they were good.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is one thing in my mind that I remember comes back. I think combination maybe of the fourth World Series game.
In 60. Yeah.
I drove in the winning run and made a play in the outfield that cut off the tying run in the same game, which is, I remember those things.
Yeah.
I'm not bragging about it or anything. It just happened.
Well, you've got a right to brag about it, Bill. That accounted for that game, along with what everybody else did. But if you hadn't performed either one on either occasion, you wouldn't have won that game, probably. How do you explain that you came up in your first season as a home run hitter and never did much thereafter?
Ballpark.
At a sportsman's park?
Yeah, the old ballpark.
Yeah.
Short right field fence.
So my
year before, I played in Rochester, which is identical.
Yeah.
I hit 22 the year before. I'd never hit more than 6 anywhere else in the Yankee organization.
Yeah.
If I think I'm right. And I don't think I ever hit more than 6 in minor leagues. Yes, I did.
Yeah, you got 10 in your second season. You got 10 home runs.
Okay.
But in the majors, you never hit 10 again. You were 9 twice. But I just wondered. I can see now that you say Sportsman Park.
No, no question about it.
Who was the hardest pitcher for you to hit?
Well, I think probably the best pitcher over the years was Koufax.
That would be hard to get an argument against that.
And that's one of those situations.
For that short period of about 4 years.
Yeah, that's one of those situations where I didn't really mind facing him.
Yeah.
You just overpower you.
Sure.
I could see the ball, and I didn't have any trouble seeing when I was going to throw the breaking ball or whatever.
Yeah.
But the curveball was so good, and the fastball had so much hop on it,
you just had
a tough time controlling it, you know. I think career-wise, Spahn was the best.
He had a mighty long and wonderful career. Yeah. I hope to get down to Hart's Shore in Oklahoma to talk to Warren later. Was the best team you played on, the 60 Pirates?
Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah, that was the best club I played on.
The best team you managed?
It was 72.
72.
And I don't like to say that to take away from the other clubs I had, but that just all around, that was the best club I had.
What's your best memory, all told, out of baseball? What do you like to think about as the most pleasant thing about the whole experience?
Well, winning. 60, back to 60.
Yeah,
I don't think that's...
it's hard to beat.
I don't know how you could...
How
you could best that, really, if that's your business.
It hasn't been.
Unless you do it over and over and over and over again, which is... Some people have been fortunate to do that, but we...
Not too many.
No.
Now, for just a few minutes, baseball today, how do you regard free agency?
No.
Would you agree that it was inevitable that it come?
Oh, I think, probably it had to come sometime.
Sooner or later,
I don't know that it's been especially... In some ways, I don't think it's been good, but other ways, I think it has been good. I think it's you have mixed...
Like most things.
Mixed feelings about, some...
Two sides to it.
You have to adjust, there's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that you take away players that fans get accustomed to and they get used to rooting for and so forth, and all of a sudden now they're gone in someplace else. I think that hurts the old following to some extent, but
it sure hasn't
hurt attendance. People just keep going.
That's true.
So I can't say it's hurt that part of it. I think it's hurt the financial situation in baseball.
Well, it has.
Arbitration. Whether that ever has any bad effects on the game, I can't answer that right now. That doesn't seem to be hurting it right now.
No, but
it could.
It's only happened and will only continue to happen as long as TV revenue makes it possible to happen.
Yes.
Without that, there would not be these enormous contracts.
But I don't blame the free agency for that. You know who I blame for that? The owners.
Oh, sure. I do too. How about arbitration? Is that a good or bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing.
I do too. Everybody seems to think so, but
except
the players' union.
The thing that I think is bad about it is the people that have to rule on these things have no idea the ins and outs of our business.
That's right.
And that's not to say that they're wrong, because they're going by what they have to deal with. The facts, it's tough.
But nevertheless, they don't really know the game that well. And I think a lot of the players now that lose in arbitration are wishing it never had happened. Because they
can't. Fortunately, some of them are losing, yeah.
Yeah, a number of them are losing, and they've got that in their craw the rest of the way through, I think.
I get pretty good feedback on that, because I guess one of the best in the business as far as presenting cases for the clubs is Tal Smith.
Undoubtedly.
Who was I worked with for a number of years and still very close with him.
Yeah. How about long-term, no-cut, guaranteed contracts?
Foolish.
Absolutely.
in our business. It's foolish.
Everybody I talk with says the same thing, but when you've got a union like you have nowadays, it's hard to...
Well, I still don't blame anybody but the owners. They're
That's
the ones
right.
that created
That's
the situation.
Right.
I don't blame the players. I don't blame the agents. I don't blame the union. I blame the owners for...
Well, basically, that's true. How about the artificial turf? Did you, you played on it some, didn't you?
Never played on it.
Didn't you?
No, never played on it. I was there when it was...
It had to come in pretty
started.
Soon after you...
Well, see, last year I played with 65. And
really?
It,
yeah.
66 was the first year.
Mm-hmm.
In the Astrodome. They had the natural stuff
oh, yeah.
in the Astrodome
yeah,
when they first
yeah.
went in there.
Yeah.
I think it's a necessity in some cases.
It is.
Overlapping schedules and professional sports and,
yeah.
and climates and
climate.
So forth.
Well, especially in these northern
yeah.
climates. But you would agree that it does modify the game.
It wasn't made to play on turf.
That's
it
right.
was made to play on grass
that's
and
right.
dirt. That's
yeah.
the way our game was made. But you learn to deal with
got
it.
Got to deal with it like you do
that's
with
right.
a lot of other things.
That's right.
Are you in the least upset by the fact that almost every new ballpark for the last 20 years is practically identical with most of the other new ballparks?
No, I haven't. That hasn't upset me in the least. No. I think it's probably realistically thinking, that's probably the way it should be, because then you can compare records and compare feats and compare.
Yeah.
Now, I'll back off a little bit and say there were a number of unique ballparks and situations that created a great deal of interest for our game that
yeah.
really you would like to have back in it.
Yeah. Well, you're right both ways, I think, Bill. Old timers such as myself lament the passing of places like
yeah.
Forbes
no
Field.
Question about it.
Forbes
no
Field
doubt.
Was a great ballpark.
Yeah.
And many others. And they're going to lose, looks like they're going to lose Comiskey any minute.
Probably.
Wrigley and Fenway look like they're still ready to go for a long time. Even Tiger Stadium, there's a question mark there as to why they won't have to build a new one soon.
Excuse me.
And what do you think about strike zone shrinking as it has in the last 20 years?
Well, I think it's too small.
It is?
Yeah. I don't know. I really don't know what to say about it other than I think when a strike, your areas are designated, that's what ought to be
that's
a strike.
What they ought to call. They
really
theoretically call. Are going to do that this year, but I don't know that they are.
The difference in thinking on one leg to the other, I think, has been ridiculous.
Yes, that's right.
I think you can't take a group of people, umpires, and put them together, whether they're in one league or the other league, and find out and determine what's a strike and what's not a strike. And that doesn't mean it's going to be the same all the time, because human error is going to take care of that. But
and some umpires are known as a pitcher's umpire. You give them a bigger strike zone. Others
right.
have got a narrow strike zone. You think this balk business is worth worrying about?
No. I don't think it's worth worrying about. I think it's a matter of pitchers adjusting. They just got to adjust. If that's what they're going to call, that's a rule.
Yeah, it's been the rule, I guess, and they weren't calling it.
Yeah, that's right.
If there wasn't so much base stealing going on, there wouldn't be any worries about it, I don't think.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Nobody would even be commenting about
that's
it.
That's right.
But
yeah.
Base stealing is a big part of our business now.
Of course it is. Bigger than it has been since the early first decade or two of this century.
I think it's an exciting part of our business.
Of course it is. It has, the home run was exciting for a long time, but it's become so commonplace that it's not nearly as exciting as it was 30, 40, 50
yeah,
years ago.
True.
But the stolen base is one of the more exciting moments in baseball.
As soon as the pitchers learn to come to a stop, why, it'll all stop.
Yep.
In fact, I was a little bit surprised that they really hit it that hard. After I figured they'd really try to stop them in spring training, get them back on an even keel and then
yep.
relax a little bit on it
yep.
season, but they haven't. They've gone right on through with it.
That's right. You got any predictions for the four division winners this year?
No, my prediction wouldn't be any better than anybody else's.
Well, nobody's is.
I like some clubs. I like Cincinnati. I think they in Houston and San Francisco will have a good race.
That's right. It's going to be between those three.
East could be a little surprising. I don't know. That might be a tough race.
Mets
have the best club.
Mets could run away with it.
They got the best club. But
I don't think they're after.
I think St. Louis is going to be down some.
Yeah.
Especially early in the season.
Yeah.
And the main reason I say that is because about half of them had the flu about a week before the season.
The other half's injured.
And they're not ready to play yet.
No.
But they'll be.
They'll be ready to play.
Pittsburgh's better. Philadelphia, I think, is better.
Isn't that Pittsburgh resurrection a remarkable thing?
Yeah, it's almost hard to believe it happened that quick.
Does Thrift get as much credit for it as he's being given?
No, Thrift gets more credit than he should get.
Is that right?
No. I work for him.
Yeah.
So be careful.
All right.
What you say.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to take any credit away from Sid Thrift.
No,
what I mean to do is give Jim Leland a little bit more credit than he's getting.
Let's turn to Leland,
yeah.
Every now and then, a manager comes up out of the coaching ranks and surprises the baseball world, but it takes him a few years to get the credit for it.
Yes.
I guess conceivably, if the Mets have dissension and stumble, and the Cardinals don't get everybody healthy and everything, Pittsburgh or Philadelphia could...
Montreal,
very definitely, yeah. They do it, they go about it so
quietly. Cubs have been playing pretty good, so it's kind of, you know...
Yeah, Cubs, I don't think can hang up.
I think short pitching.
Yeah, they're short on pitching.
Yankees, Pittsburgh is possible, but I really think they're a year away. I think they're going to be outstanding in 89.
I can believe it.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm a year wrong.
Well, even if it's 90, it's
still
going to
be. Well, I was hoping I was really wrong and it'd be this year.
Yeah. And the Yankees, I would have to say, are the favorites in the American League East.
I'm not that familiar with all the... I don't know how good those clubs are.
And
I know the Yankees
hasn't proved that they can do it in the clutch.
No, they haven't. But
the last 2 years they have. Yeah, they got a good clutch.
I don't know how good pitching the Yankees have. They got.
Well, that's questionable. Yeah.
They got Roden. They got Guidry.
Guidry is even a question.
Yeah.
And Candelaria and Tommy John and this new guy.
Questionable.
Al Leiter may be a whiz. They claim he is, and he's.
And then they got the guy in the bullpen that's pitching well.
Yeah. He's worth his weight in gold, I guess, as any guy like him in the bullpen is. He seems to blow fewer leads, really, in the last late innings than some of these terribly hard throwers, and I guess that's understandable, too. A guy that lives by the fastball is going to get killed by the fastball now and then.
That'll happen.
Yeah, as they all... I'll never forget the look on Goose Gossage's face when he came in the playoffs against Kansas City 1 year, and Brett was up, two or three men on base, and the first pitch, whoosh, out of the sight, and Goose just couldn't believe it. He just stood there with an amazed look on his face. Well, anything else about baseball you want to add?
It's a good game.
It's the best.
It's an excellent game. I can't say enough about it. It's been awful good to me. And, I've been in it... since 1950,
most
30,
of your life.
38 years.
Yeah,
I still, I'm not that active now, but I still keep my finger in the pie enough to keep.
That's right.
Keep the.
What I'd like to admire about baseball is that for many decades it had a near monopoly on pro sports in this country. Pro football didn't amount to anything until after 1930, and gained about World War II time, it really got to be big time, and pro basketball around then or later, pro tennis, pro golf, and all of that, but now with all of the inroads, in other words, there are a lot of players in these other sports that could have been stars in baseball, but have gone off to the other sports. And still, baseball puts out a high-quality game, and its attendance keeps on going like this, and it's still the national pastime.
Well, the difference, I've said that many times. A lot of people ask me what the difference in baseball is, and I said, well, your teams as a whole aren't as good as they used to be.
That's right.
But your game is basically maybe as good or better, and your talent, your big talent is as good and better, better. And but you just don't have the congregation.
You've almost doubled the number of players and the number of teams.
And they asked me why. And I said, well, shoot, there's a number of reasons. You've doubled your teams, which scatters out your talent. You're losing your best talent to the other sports. Actually, as far as I'm concerned, your best talents aren't baseball players.
So,
football
as
players,
athletes.
Basketball players, as athletes.
That's absolutely right.
And but that doesn't seem to hurt our game. And
no.
I think one reason it doesn't hurt is baseball does an excellent job of training their players now.
Yeah.
Much better than they used to.
Oh, my, yes.
They do a good job. They organize and get the job done training-wise. And so they end up with a pretty good game.
Yeah. It's a great game. It's a great game. I would imagine you are opposed to the DH.
No, I'm not.
Aren't you?
No.
Would you be in favor of the National League adopting it?
I think I wouldn't really matter to me one way or the other, but I think they both ought to have the same.
Well, that's my feeling. It doesn't matter, but they should be together, and it's been close to
I personally feel like the game's better with the DH than it is without it, for the basic baseball fan.
You're right.
Now, for the old-timer and the old diehard baseball maneuvering and strategy and so forth, then there aren't too many of us around.
No, that's right. That breed has disappeared.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is you got a better defensive game on the field because there's always one of those guys that was sitting on the bench is now playing.
Yeah.
You also have a better offensive game because you got one more good hitter in your lineup than you had prior to the DH coming.
Mm-hmm.
You also have better pitching, basically, because your better pitchers pitch more than they did when you didn't have the DH. And there's one other point I wanted to make. You get better defensive plays because there's a better hitter in the lineup, more good hitters in the lineup, because good defensive plays aren't made against pitchers and poor hitters. They're made against the guy that drives the ball and hits the ball hard and so forth. So that's four reasons I think it's got to be a better game.
Four mighty good reasons. Yeah. Well.
I'll show you the room. Are you basically we done?
Yeah, I think we're.
Unless you got.
Let's call it off. I was going to